Welcome to episode 124 of the Atomic Powered Supercast, with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Nightwing, A Knight of Bludhaven, by Chuck Dixon. And now, the cast begins. Okay, everybody, welcome to another acrobatic episode of the Atomic Pirate Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hey.
David.
Hello.
And we're continuing on with our sidekick arc, reading Nightwing, A Knight of Bludhaven. It's the first 8 issues of Nightwing's solo run from 1996, written by Chuck Dixon with art by Scott McDaniel. And in this one, Robin has been Nightwing for a while, but he's been, you know, still with a team, with the Teen Titans for a long time. But he's decided to go it on his own. He had a little 4-issue miniseries, and he was like, yeah, I did pretty good in those four issues. I'm gonna go get myself my own series in my own city. And this is that.
Snap.
So what did you guys think of this?
It was cool.
It was like, okay, the first 4 issues, I was kind of like, this is so bad. Maybe it's so bad it's good. And then by the end, I was like, okay, that was actually pretty good. So I feel like I actually need to talk this one out to have a real opinion on it.
You know what's funny? That's my exact thought. Because I was sitting here thinking about this comic and whether or not I liked it. And I actually just sit and think about it. And I still don't know. I think the big barrier is the really, really shitty 90s art. This is bad. I mean, the chief of police is like the steroid addict to be the king of all steroid addicts. Like, my God. The first panel with him, there's like veins popping out everywhere. It's disgusting.
Well, he's like working out. He was doing boxing or something, right?
No, the first scene with him, he's just at his desk yelling at
Deadly
Sons. Oh,
yeah, that's a later scene. Well, he was yelling. He was very stressed. He was yelling, Andy. Cut the guy some slack, okay?
Right, but okay, see, but we get J. Jonah Jameson, we get a vein popping out in his head when he yells, too, but it's like the small little forehead vein. This dude had, like, veins all down his neck and shit, like Bane would.
It was like what... It's like if someone took Harvey Dent's bad side of his face and put it on this guy's neck, is what it looked like.
So he looks like a burn victim.
Yeah. Like acid.
Only on his neck.
he's not in there that much, but I just bring him up because that's the best example I could think of how horrible this art is. I'm sorry, Scott McDaniel. I know it was the popular style of the day. I know you probably don't still draw like this. Maybe you do. You're very good at drawing like this. Just this style is so dated as the 90s.
This whole comic felt so dated. Did you pick up on the 90s slang where it was, he would say things and it's like, what?
I don't know, like what? I must have cruised right past them.
Yeah, I didn't pause at any,
Maybe I grew up too much in the 90s.
This is, okay, there's one that I could not understand or fathom and I was too lazy to Google. I don't know if it's a typo. An issue with the digital copy I was reading, a misreading on my part, or just like, I don't know what he's, Dick Grayson says that something is a very Tony address.
Oh yeah, I didn't get that either.
What does that mean?
Oh, that's like, you've never heard that before? I don't think that's I don't think that's a 90s term. It's like a, maybe it is. I don't, nobody says it anymore, but I haven't heard anyone say it, but it's like a, like a posh type of thing. Like Beverly Hills would be... if you had a house in Beverly Hills, that could be considered a Tony address, I think.
Huh.
Now I have to look it up.
Illuminating.
Yeah. I don't know about illuminating.
But, I mean, there's some other stuff in there. Like, I think at some point someone says something is such a drag. And I don't...
That's kind of 90s.
It feels...
That is, you know, I didn't think about that when I was reading it, but come to think, I haven't heard anybody say that's a drag for about a decade. So I don't know. The other thing that gets me with this art, going back to that, is I keep losing the action, and I don't know why. I don't know if it's because, like, everybody is so muscly, all there is in the frame is just a bunch of muscles. I don't know.
I think it's because most pages were very large frames where... Okay, actually, a perfect example of this would be when we were reading the comic with the lady detective who used to be...
Alias?
Yeah, Alias.
Oh, there we go, yeah.
Like, I just lost that. And we see, like, I think various points where it's frame by frame. You see, like, her mouth moving and then the words coming in. Movement is so specific. Mm-hmm. This is the complete opposite. You get one big frame, and, for instance, you'll have Nightwing beginning an action on the left side, in the middle of an action on in the middle, and then finishing it on the right side. But everything, because it's 90s art, is so heavily inked. And there's only one color in the background, which for some reason was yellow, that it can get really confusing as to what is happening when. At least that was my problem.
Yeah, it is. It especially the frames where it shows him doing, like you said, he's complete. It shows him at different stages of an action. Like I'm looking at actually the first page of issue 7, and it has him fighting a bunch of guys, and he's like tripping a guy, and he's jumping, and he's like choking a dude.
Really, those were like some of the more coherent ones for me.
Well, but the thing is, like this one's okay, but sometimes when it's like a splash page, it's kind of hard to follow.
Oh, I think a good example of that would be like when he's on the train and he's trying to catch up with the guys on the train, and he jumps up above the overpass. And there's, like, a bunch of pipes or something and trucks and shit. And he's, like, leaping through it. But you kind of lose him in between the wires. Like, it doesn't quite flow right.
That is the exact set of pages. Or was it, like, a two-page spread or something?
I think it might have
been. It's the exact thing I'm thinking of, though. There's one part where I think he, for some reason, dives under an oil tanker. And it took me a few minutes to figure out what he was doing there.
See, but then the one that works for me when he does that is like when he's starting out on the roof and then he parkours down three floors to the ground.
Like, yes.
I don't remember what page that was, but that action was really, really clear. I had no problem following that. The worst for me was the frame by frame when he's in the cash checking place or the check cashing place.
Mm-hmm.
And like it gets picked up by the helicopter and flown off. Like, my God, I did not have any idea what was happening inside of the building as it was getting flown off. Because he was color, and then, like, everything else was just shades of yellow. Even, like, Foxy was shades of yellow. Or what's his real name? Reynard? Reynard. Shades of yellow. Everybody was shades of yellow. And it's like, what is going on here? Did somebody piss on my comic and print it after all, or what? I'm so lost.
I think it's not even just the yellow. It's so black in the background. You really have to work to distinguish what each heavy shape is. And I want to point out, like, this kind of movement we see in Batwoman as it's drawn by...
Yeah, by J.H.
Williams. J.H. Williams III. And he likes to do frames where we see the same character taking multiple actions within the same frame, or like, you know, continuing an action. Mm-hmm. And it's so smooth because there's so much detail and the line work is so fine. And I think here it's really just the inking. Like, this inking is crazy.
Well, like Andy said, that I feel like this was a popular style back then. There's so much, the shading is very heavy. You know, so it makes it difficult to, I don't know, I'm not sure what it does, but it takes something away from me. It's hard to describe what it is, but yeah, I totally agree with you guys. Oh, so Andy, I went and I found that page you were talking about where he parkours off the roof.
Yes.
Down to the, I think the reason that one works so well is because the frame guides the action as well. It's a vertical frame from top of the page to the bottom. And the gutters, there's actually gutters on this page because there's some parts where it's hard to find the gutters too.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one, it's a column from the top where he starts the action, and it goes down to the bottom where he finishes it. And even the narration, little thought bubbles, that they follow it too. Like the sentence goes down the page also. So I think that one's hard to follow. the one that I mentioned earlier, where it's the first page of issue 7, it's a horizontal frame, and it goes from left to right of the page, and Nightwing he's in all key at one at some point in the action, he's like on every side of the rectangle. Like he's at the top, he's at the bottom, he's at the right and the left. So it's hard to tell where he starts and where he ends.
Yeah, and the course that you're supposed to follow, it doesn't flow as naturally.
It's not clear.
So maybe I think this is probably just an example of why comics can be so difficult. I think a lot of the publishers have gotten the art of doing this very precise, working the colorist, the inker, and the letterer all kind of working together, and they've figured out where things need to go to lead the eye, necessarily. And here, I think it's in that phase, it's in that transitioning phase between, you get those old 60s and 70s comics where it's just big block of text on the top or big block of text on the bottom of the frame, mm-hmm. and like the thought bubbles or the text boxes aren't contained within the frame. They just kind of like are a label along the frame.
Yeah.
And then we get to today where like those text boxes can lead your eye through the frame. Like you say, like that's the other reason that page works so good. Like they can kind of lead you through the frame as you follow the action. But this is sort of that area in between where they're not doing the old thing anymore, but they haven't quite got it down as good as what they're doing right now. And it's just like, text boxes anywhere we can fit them. And I think it's like, I don't think any one thing in here is done like just shitty, you know, like the coloring, we can complain about the yellow, but I think the choice of yellow is intentional because that's the way Bloodhaven's supposed to feel. It's dark and grimy like Gotham. That's why the inking's heavy, and the yellow makes sense because it's not dark and evil. It's dark and grimy and slimy, mm-hmm. you know? And so that, I mean, I made the joke about piss earlier, but now that I think about it, like, I imagine Bloodhaven smells like urine, you know? Like, it's a place that's dirty. Nobody really wants to be there. It's just they can't afford to move away, you know? And, like, I think that color choice is intentional. And if the comic as a whole would have worked, I think we would have been talking about how great it was, how great the coloring choice for the mood and the setting and the tone was. But it just, I think this is an example of none of the parts coming together to make a greater whole.
Yeah, I do want to try to give the art some credit by saying, like, I feel like this was more of the style of the time and a publishing choice than the artist, because like the character design feels very tongue in cheek at first. Like, okay, I was really confused at first because I didn't realize Nightwing had that vile ponytail. So I thought like he had a mullet that got shorter when he was Nightwing, but he was actually putting up his hair. But I mean, like, yeah, there's this such a goofy part where he gets his ponytail, let's not call it that, his rat tail cut off in a knife fight. And yeah. It's like defining kind of this shift from very gross like 80s and 90s character design to something a little more modern. So I feel like, you know, maybe the artist and the writer together thought we need kind of a less 80s Nightwing and knew that there was kind of a shift there or a cultural bias towards this ugliness. I want to think that.
Yeah. And honestly, Nightwing, I think has had the worst costume in the history of comics. His costume from the 80s was just horrendous. And if I imagine if he was in the 80s costume with the ponytail and I were the author of this and I got that character, I'd be like, no, shit's got to change today. We are not doing this.
It was no bueno.
So the only last note about the art is the way that Nightwing tends to be drawn. And I think this might have been where it started. I don't know. I don't remember much of Nightwing in the Titans stuff. But I know, like, nowadays, Nightwing is the example of a male character drawn for the female gaze. Like,
oh, the infamous butt shot.
Yes, there's not just one, though, my friend.
But there's one in...
Yeah, there's one really infamous butt shot of Nightwing. But, like, there's a lot of times where he's drawn specifically, like, hey... Ladies, check out this piece of man meat.
As a lady, I really don't feel like it's, I don't know, like, I don't feel like that's appealing at all.
Well, you put something in the notes about this character being drawn sort of like in more feminine poses.
Well, that's what gets me. I'm kind of, like, I don't know if it's meant to appeal or if it's supposed to be, if it's the male gaze just turned around so that females are having the male gaze. Does that make sense? Because it's not like, here's Nightwing looking sexy and masculine. This is Nightwing in what we would call traditionally, like, quote-unquote, female superhero poses. So he's doing things like doing handstands and then the splits. He does the splits so often. There's so many butt shots. And to me, that doesn't feel like it's meant to be targeted for female enjoyment so much as a male perspective of what female enjoyment might be, or a male version of that female superhero. So to me, it almost at this point still feels like a male gaze just kind of flipped around.
I feel like the artists wouldn't consciously make that choice. I think they're just trying to make him action-packed, right? He's like an acrobatic character. Yeah. So he would do like, I feel like he's supposed to be like Jean-Claude Van Damme, right? In yeah. some ways. Like, because that guy is like the master of the splits, right?
Oh man, ponytail too. I'm thinking of Steven Seagal with the ponytail. My bad.
I see where you're coming from, Jen. I just don't think that it was done intentionally.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's like, man, ladies would love to see all these crotch shots.
I agree with that.
Of Dick Grayson, you know what I mean?
I don't think it's the average comic book artist who, you know, even sits down and is like, today, how will I examine third wave feminism in my work? You know, he's not doing that.
But no, I think to a certain degree that artists who are drawing women in like the Hawkeye Initiative type way that they poke fun at, right? I feel like on a subconscious level, people do that because they're like, I'm going to make this girl look fine. That's why Starfire is going to come out of the water all sexy looking with her hair flown back, you know? But I don't think some dude was like, man, ladies are going to love seeing Dick's dick, you know?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Thank God they didn't draw that detail.
Okay.
But see, like, I looked up when I think of somebody's, like, the Nightwing butt shot, I looked it up. It's actually from Secret Six, number 9. So it's a Gail Simone and Nicola Scott.
Ah, there we go.
Thing. So I think that that Nicola Scott might have done it on purpose.
I know Gail definitely would have done it on purpose.
Because Nightwing, his ass looks great in this shot. he must ride his bike all the time or something. I don't know how you can even get to that level.
It gets you a little jealous.
I mean, his like rock. You could like bounce a quarter off of that.
Oh no. Okay, so I just googled that, and there is a Tumblr.
Oh yeah.
Dedicated to the most famous ass in comics, it is fuckyeahdickgraysonsass.tumblr.com. In the incredible Fuck Yeah series of things titled that way.
I mean, obviously he works out, so
yeah,
a lot apparently.
A lot. I'm going to go ahead.
Jumping is like part of his thing, right?
Yeah, he's all acrobatic and shit, except for when he can't catch the baby falling down. We'll talk about that in a bit.
Yeah. I'm going to just throw in like the thing I've been wanting to say, and it's, if Nightwing was a villain, his name would be the Pile Driver based on all of these poses. It's just very...
There's
something going on there. Don't know quite what it is, but there's something going on.
So, I mean, we were talking about feminism a little bit a second ago until we got into sexual positions. And the thing that makes me weird is the first issue. Is it just me, or is the gangster's plan, the entire plan of Reynard's gang, to make the enemy gangster's wife bitch his ear off until he succumbs?
Yes.
It's because she's baby crazy.
That's the entire thing. Like, the enemy gangster's wife is baby crazy, so you're going to steal embryos so that she bitches him out until he comes back with an offer? That's horrible.
Maybe they had just seen Jurassic Park and they were like, man, the embryo racket. That's where the money is.
Somehow more feasible. It's like, if you're going to put all the time and resources into doing something like that, wouldn't you just hijack the wife? It seems like it would be just as easy as getting a whole friggin' refrigerator out of the guy's house.
They're guys wearing fox masks, Andy.
Maybe. I mean, there's great incompetence going on here.
Right. And we talk about the incredible incompetence and how these guys have a terrible plan. But at the same time, I think it's mentioned at least two or three times in the issue just how much way worse Bluehaven is than Gotham. Like, we know Gotham's bad, but Bluehaven's so much worse, you guys.
Maybe they don't have anything because it's so bad there isn't anything better to steal except for fridges full of embryos.
It just... That just
they're like, Black Mask is like... Because it's Black Mask's gang, right? They're like, man, we got to get into Bloodhaven. You know how we're going to do? We're going to steal a fridge full of embryos because that's the most valuable thing in this town.
Okay. Okay, wait. You mentioned Black Mask, and this is something I do want to ask Jen a little bit. Since you're not as... Except for what we've read for this show, you haven't had a whole lot of exposure to DC Comics before we started recording this shindig.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you feel like was the barrier to entry to this comic? Like, do you have any idea who Blockbuster, Black Mask, any of these Lady Vic are?
I don't know who they are, but I didn't even feel like these villains were relevant, so it didn't matter.
They didn't matter one little bit.
I did not care. I mean, I thought the most interesting evildoer in this whole piece was Soames, because he was just, like, playing both sides so well throughout most of it, and he did a good job.
Yeah, and I'm still not 100% sure what side Soames is on.
Yeah.
I mean, we see him interacting with both of them. It seems like he's...
Well, I think it was clear, at least in the first... Up until we see him with... even after we see him with Blockbuster, it seems like he was using Nightwing to keep Black Mask out of Bloodhaven. But at the same time, it seems like he's also playing Blockbuster to some degree that hasn't been fully revealed yet.
I really do think Soames and Chief Steroid, I can't even remember his real name, but the police chief, I think that they've mentioned status quo a couple times, and I think that's what they're really interested in. That Bluehaven, as it is, without any capes, with the gang set up the way they are, is the devil they know. And the devil they know, they can dance with and they can deal with. But if Dick Grayson's going to come in here and start messing stuff up, and he's going to change the power structure, it's going to completely alter the way that they operate. And I don't know if they're doing it out of a measure of comfort, or if that they've created this sort of power structure. I don't know. I think Soames and Chief Steroids are... Or a third kind of dynamic in Bluehaven's power struggle between Nightwing, the gangs, and the police. I think the police are much more involved in this than Dick Grayson is willing to let himself find out.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Soames can't be really truly villainous here just because he's incredibly intelligent from what we can see. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone says that Blockbuster is a genius, but we don't see that. We see him smashing things. Soames plays both sides, and we watch that happen. And men like him, like underlings, even if they're powerful underlings, don't usually meet good ends. They don't have great fates. You know, they're not really the ones in power. So I think Soames would know that mm-hmm. with his level of, you know, like, he's sharp. He might not have the highest IQ, not like Blockbuster, supposedly, but he's very sharp.
He's cunning. I feel yes. like he can, you know, I guess cunning is all I had, but...
Well, yeah. Like Jin said, he can play all the angles mm-hmm. and make it work out the way that he wants to, or at least nudge it in that direction, which is really difficult considering the people involved here. I mean, these aren't just like mobsters. These are crazy fuck mobsters like Black Mask, Blockbuster. I know Blockbuster is drawn so silly in this comic that it's hard to take him seriously, especially as he's getting electrocuted and his shaggy molester haircut is like shocking out away from his head. Like it's so silly. You can't take him seriously, but honest to God, Blockbuster is a fucked up dude. He is really smart. He is incredibly strong. And if it's not any kind of spoiler, he does defeat Oracle at her own game in Birds of Prey. Like, the reason Oracle has to leave Gotham is because of Blockbuster. Like, he is serious business, and he will wreck you. So it's hard to take him seriously in this comic, though. The other one that's hard to take seriously is Lady Vic. I don't even remember what she was there for. I just remember, like, oh, God, that hurt my eyeballs.
She was there to... Because remember, so Nightwing went to Bludhaven to investigate this, what's his name, Angel Marin?
Yeah.
And she was owed money by Angel Marin, and she was there to collect her money.
Okay. That was it? She was just there to get my money, honey?
Yeah, Luke Cage style.
Did you pick up that she was, or I guess you guys knew who she was, right?
I had never seen her before. God, I thought her...
The name sounded familiar.
Well, she was like, Vic stands for victim. I was like, oh my God.
That was really bad. They keep saying she's well-spoken. And finally I realized that by well-spoken, they actually meant she had a British accent. And I was like, this is not the same thing, guys.
Well, I got that she was like, British, maybe.
Yeah, that scene when she has the uniform off and she's talking to her butler dude. You kind of get a little air of that.
But it's just, they keep saying, like, the well-spoken lady villain, and it's, like, yeah, she speaks, I don't know, better than pretty much thug in Bludhaven, but she's not...
That doesn't count for a whole lot.
Yeah. She's not, like, the pinnacle of eloquence.
Well, you know she's not American, because there's the confusing last scene at the end of issue 4, I think, or 5, where she's, like, meeting Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
And I was like, why is Bruce in this? And then we never see her again, and she's like, I'm what you Americans call a workaholic. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
She's horrible. Her mask is the worst.
No, her boob window is the worst.
Well, that's pretty bad, but her mask just makes her head look weird. It's like she's insect-themed.
Yes. The whole getup is just wrong. I don't understand.
Her boob window is pretty bad, because it's like, she's got like a... Her jacket is like a fancy... I don't even know what I'm trying to say. It's like a... Not like a red coat type of jacket. I mean, I guess it kind of is. But then she's boob windows, and...
It's like,
bad. It's just horrible.
It's like in Star Trek, Lursa and Bator. The Klingon, there's like Klingon sisters, and they have like just this little triangle cut out of their, it's like a standard Klingon uniform, except there's a triangle cut out so you can show, hey, they've got boobs, they're women. Because otherwise you wouldn't know. I don't know. Like, it's just that kind of just like obligatory, hey, look, boobs. And it doesn't serve any function I can tell of character or place. It serves none of that.
There's also a line in here where Nightwing describes her as talks like Jane Seymour, fights like Bruce Lee.
See, I didn't know who Jane Seymour was.
You don't know who Jane Seymour is?
No, who's Jane Seymour?
She's an a British actress.
I don't know.
Do you remember a show from the 90s? What's it called? Something... Medicine Woman. Ah, what's that show?
Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. Yes, she's from that show.
I've never seen an episode of that.
Google her. She's been in a lot of stuff.
Okay. Yeah, if you Googled her, you would be like, oh, yeah, now I see her.
See, and this is the problem with using dated references.
Well, it's not dated. This is a very contemporary reference for when this comic was published.
Right, right. But that's what I'm saying. Like, using,
dated now.
Using no, it wasn't dated then. But using
now, it's dated.
I didn't mean dated like you could tell it's old. I mean dated like using this reference will place it in a certain period of time.
Oh, okay.
Like if I said something, if I wrote a comic and referenced Harlem Shake. Right, like in 6 months, it would be grown. In 2 weeks, it would be grown inducing, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Please don't. I don't.
No. We don't need that. We don't need that.
I mean, that is kind of common, though. You'll see characters refer to various things on YouTube or, I don't know.
I think it's okay. I think these kind of references are okay. We don't complain about Shakespeare when he makes contemporary references.
Well,
I'm not saying that this is anywhere near Shakespeare, because I know
at least one of the three of us complains about it. But then I complain about everything with Shakespeare.
I think it depends on how fitting your reference is to the current dialogue and how memorable the reference itself is, too.
Yeah.
Because if it's just like, hey, I'm hip, I'm cool, then it's like, go away. We don't need your authorship here.
It's like you can always make a Star Wars reference. That's not ever going to be. Everybody will get it. The people who don't get it will just be able to gloss over it because it's so much a part of the culture. They'll just put it in their brain and process it like it was no big thing.
Well, I mean, you get the Bruce Lee half of the reference, right?
Yes. Yeah, that totally you get. Because Bruce Lee is actually famous.
Well, name a British actress.
Dame Judi Dench.
Yeah, but see, I know who Judi Dench is.
Yeah.
But there's probably a lot of kids who are younger than, probably like 10 years younger than me, who have no idea who she is. They'll be like, who's Judi Dench? And you'll say, oh, it's M. And they'll be like, oh, M.
Yeah.
From James Bond. But
that's the only thing I know her from. No, it's
see, that's
I probably think I've seen her in other things. I don't remember, though.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, he could have said Mary Poppins. That probably would have been a better
Bam.
British
woman. Yes. Yeah, but that's different too, though.
He should have checked with me on that reference.
See, but then if you say Mary Poppins, then you get like a sing-songy thing in her voice. That's not right either.
I think at one point he does call her Queen Victoria.
See, there you go. That works. That works great. I don't know. The other
spending a lot of time.
The other,
yeah.
Well, I mean, accents. I mean, honestly, though, it's important because it pulls you out of the comic. Like, if you want to make sure that your character has an accent and you, for whatever reason, it might not be you as the author, it might be the editor, it might be who knows what. But if the comic can't convey accent just through dialogue or through natural course of speech, then making references like this, really, it pulls you out a little bit. Like, I didn't know who Jane Seymour was, but I got Bruce Lee, and I didn't realize she had a British accent until, like, I was done reading her. But the one that's done really well is the chick I can't remember, the super of Nightwing's building.
Clancy.
Yeah, Clancy.
I wanted to talk about her because does anyone else think it's really weird that Dick Grayson establishes himself as a detective in Bloodhaven by solving the mystery of the Asian landlord? Like, he frames it as a mystery, and it's his detective work. It's like the subplot.
He's joking around. He's just
having fun. I feel like that was just like a personal thing. It wasn't like, look how good of a detective I am.
Yeah,
it just felt so goofy.
Well, yeah,
it was goofy.
It was totally goofy.
But I think that was part of the. It was kind of charming too, because it's like. You know, you could feel like he really wants to know what she looks like.
And I think because
he's always like, man, that
voice.
Irish accent is really getting him hot, you know. So to a certain degree, I think it's a good, that was like a kind of a good mystery because it takes the Batman out of this Batman character.
Yeah.
Because Batman wouldn't be concerned with that at all.
Which I think is important because there's a lot in this where it's overbearing to read that Dick Grayson is trying so hard to separate himself and separate Bloodhaven from Gotham and Batman. Like, Bloodhaven's way worse than Gotham, and I am totally not, like, relying on Batman at all here, guys. I'm, like, out on my own. I'm so cool. I got this. I can handle it. It's cool. I got this. Like, it's said so many times, it's so overbearing. It's like the little things like that. You're right. Batman would have never done that. And that's why it's important to show these kinds of things. Like, you get the sense that Dick Grayson's civilian life is Dick Grayson. It's who he genuinely is. Bruce Wayne is a front.
Yeah, like later in this storyline, Dick eventually becomes a police officer of Bloodhaven.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He does, right?
Yes.
And so he actually has to train and go to this job. Bruce Wayne is the front for Batman. I mean, this is like a very cliche thing to say, but I think it's absolutely true. Because he pushes his Bruce Wayne responsibility off onto people like Lucius.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who run
Wayne Corp.
Wayne Enterprises. And Batman's personal life matters very little. Very little.
It matters in so much as it's a function to get the heat off of him. And that's it.
And so, but here in Nightwing, I mean, if you think about it, Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson, they're victims. They are placed in their circumstance, not being superheroes, but they're both orphans from the same type of thing. Bruce Wayne's parents were killed by Joe Chill, and Dick Grayson's parents were killed by, I forget what the gangster's name is.
Oh, crap. I don't know.
It doesn't matter. But look at the way they choose to live there, to move on from this thing. I would say Bruce Wayne doesn't move on from it at all.
No.
And Dick, we get it a little bit in here. I mean, we see him remembering his parents, but he can have these kinds of, these kinds of personal interactions with people on a different level, like a non-professional level.
Yeah.
Like he has this kind of flirtatious thing with Barbara Gordon, and now he has this Clancy. And so I've read some later comics. Actually, I read No Man's Land recently, and there's some parts where Dick is in Bloodhaven, and he gets to know a lot of the people that live in the building with him. And so it's like I said, I feel like it sets him apart from, he's a Batman, but these kinds of things are the things that set him apart from Bruce Wayne. And so it matters, even though it's kind of goofy.
Yeah.
But because it shows him.
Bruce would never be goofy.
Yeah. Sorry, I was talking for a long time there.
That's all good. Yeah, and I think doing it that way is subtle and more effective than him constantly saying, I am not, this is way worse than Gotham, this is not Gotham, this is all the way, it's different than Gotham, and constantly referencing Gotham and Batman. And I get that will be a big part of what's on his mind, but I don't need to see it in the text boxes. Where I need to see it is where it does come out when he's talking to Tim Drake. That interaction was really cool to see, actually, because I haven't thought much before that about how Dick Grayson and Tim Drake are different from each other and how they're different people. And it's kind of neat to think that Tim Drake just kind of saw this as, like, part of his adolescence, and then when he went away to college, he would just quit. He just stopped being Robin. Like, I'm just doing it for fun right now, bro, but I'm gonna give it up, whatever.
It is Tim Drake who becomes Red Hood later, right?
No, Tim Drake becomes Red Robin.
Oh, Red Robin?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the whole Red Robin thing was kind of like, okay, we need to give, everybody needs to upgrade, right? Because he, in the old continuity, he became Red Robin after
Bruce died and he went
after,
on the hunt.
Yeah, Batman RIP. And so then Dick becomes Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And
Damian is the new
Robin. Damian's Robin. So Tim, they couldn't make him be like everybody. He's now Nightwing. That would have been dumb. But I think Red Robin was kind of dumb too. Like, I don't... So now he's Red Robin in the New 52.
I mean, that's an interesting discussion. I think if it's interesting to me because it seems like DC tries so hard to find a place for all of these Robins. They've even found a place for Jason Todd becoming the Red Hood quasi-villain, quasi-hero kind of guy. Like, they found a place for all of these Robins.
He's an anti-hero. He's like a...
Yeah. But
he's like a Punisher type guy.
But at the same time, they've only ever found a place for one Batgirl. And I guess Black Bat now is Cassandra Cain.
Yeah, Cassandra Cain is Black Bat now.
But is that just post 52, or was she Black Bat? Like, did she come back?
She became Black Bat in Batman Incorporated. Okay. Because that was a title that they had before New 52, and then it ended, and then a few months into New 52, it came back.
And then I gotta wonder what happened to Stephanie Brown. It's like,
she's dead, I thought.
It's just like you said that I hadn't even thought about it before you said it, but like, making him Red Robin, everybody has to upgrade. We got a new Robin, so all the other Robins have to fill some other role so that we can have this one be Robin. And then all these other Robins have to be something. But it's like, if there's a Batgirl in the way you don't like, just, you know, get rid of her. Whatever. It's fine. We should talk about that when we read a Batgirl comic. We should read some Batgirl someday.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, so, like, Stephanie Brown was Spoiler first.
Yes.
And then she became Robin, and then she became Batgirl, and then she died.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Yeah.
I'll pour one for my homegirl later. So let's talk about the story of this for a little bit. As much as we've talked about like the awkwardness of this comic, I really like the way that it built a mystery.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think the story was good.
Because I think this was way more rewarding to read as a mystery than Court of Owls was. Because Court of Owls was a mystery, but like, you knew they existed. There's no question Court of Owls existed. Of course Court of Owls exists. Otherwise, what's the whole point of this mystery? You know, and it's like it's a mystery, but you're only waiting for Batman to figure it out. You already have half the answers. You know he's going to figure it out. You know he's going to figure it out, and he's not going to have things handed to him, per se. You're waiting for it all to happen. But in this, I don't know what the hell's coming up. I don't know who the fuck's doing what.
Yeah, and, we're finding stuff out along with Nightwing.
And I think it helps, too, that Nightwing is also not just naturally figuring everything out like some genius detective. Like, it doesn't come to him second nature the way that it does to Batman. I think that's what we're supposed to get from this, that he's having to work at it, and that sometimes information is just handed to him, and he just kind of trusts it, whether he should or shouldn't. Like, well, I heard this from Soames. Let's go find out. Like, buddy, slow down. Think a little bit. Like, it's nice to see that he doesn't have those chops in the same way, and I think it's fun to sort our way through this cesspool of Bloodhaven as he goes along and does it himself. I think it's neat to do it along with him, and it makes for a way more interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
I think they used it to develop his character too, because when he's like stuck and he's like, don't tell Batman, you know, Batman can't find out that I'm failing. He doesn't turn to anything Batman taught him either. Like, I mean, he uses those skills inherently in his fighting and his he didn't learn his acrobatics from Batman, but...
No, I'm sure he got refined a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, but he flashes back as he's getting closer and closer and closer to the actual answer to his parents teaching him how to do acrobatics on the trapeze.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his dad says, like, it's not about being brave to get to the second or the first one. It's about going and keeping going. And that's exactly what he does. And it proves to be very valuable for him. And, you know, he thinks it ends with his mom kind of showing there's always going to be someone to catch you in the end. And in this case, it was actually Soames, which was really neat.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it shows his separation from Batman really well, that he took teachings from his parents to solve this crime rather than from the world's greatest detective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really do like the way that, and I know, again, it's overbearing because he says it and it's the show don't tell kind of thing that you get pounded into you, but I like that he is figuring it out on his own, that he's not necessarily just doing it the way Batman would do it. And from a reader's perspective, that's nice, too, because if I want that, I would just read, you know, Batman.
Like, yeah, I was kind of going to say the same thing.
But I think it's interesting still how analogous they are. Even though he's trying so hard to set himself apart, it's interesting how similar they still are. Like, before Batman got to Gotham, Gotham was nobody's. Like, nobody wanted to go to Gotham. Gotham was so bad, no hero wanted to set up shop there. Until Batman was like, that's where I'll be, bro. It's cool, I got this. Like, Metropolis, everybody thinks of Superman, but there's actually 5 or 6 heroes operating out of Metropolis. Like, it's Superman's gig, but he's gone, like, half the year. So there's Booster Gold, there's Question operates out of Metropolis. I can't even remember them all. Guardian operates out of Metropolis. There's a bunch of people operating out of Metropolis. But Gotham is just Batman's. And Bloodhaven is a lot the same. Nobody wants Bloodhaven. It's shitty. It's, like, so shitty that, like, you don't even want to think about living there. Yeah, they need a hero, and it needs to get cleaned up. But if I gotta clean it up, I gotta live there? Fuck that. You know, like, and he takes that into his own. And there's so many parallels. Like, I mean, he mentions Soames is no Jim Gordon, right? And it's true, their relationship is way different. Soames is not Jim Gordon, not in the least. He's not out on a one-man crusade to clean up the city as a cop. But it's interesting that Nightwing chooses to build a singular relationship with one cop and to come to him for information from the police force. Like, he's falling into so many similar patterns, but he's trying so hard to not.
Well, I think that's cool. I think that's kind of cool because, like you said, we don't, as a reader, there's no value in having, there's no value in having another Batman comic, right? What's the point of that? Instead, you have the same character without a cape or a cowl. Mm-hmm. So what's good is, it's great to write another character in such a way that he's not the same one, but it's kind of interesting to see Nightwing consciously making an effort to not be Batman, even though they're trying to do the same thing, because it sets up an avenue of growth for Nightwing.
Yeah. Right?
We get a little bit of growth in him when we see his ponytail get cut off. But it's like, okay, I'm going to clean up Bloodhaven like Batman has arguably done in Gotham City, because there's arguably a lot of bad stuff that happens there. But he's not going to do it in the same way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that I feel like that makes it more interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think it's good that it's a conscious effort on Nightwing's part.
All right, well then let's rate this. Oh, God. Who wants to go first?
You do.
Oh, shit. Why did you do that?
Bam.
Crap. I mean, there's so much in this that I really didn't enjoy. I hated the art. Hate's a strong word. It didn't work the way I think it was supposed to work. It really bugged me on some level that the entire point of Reynard's plan in the first issue was to make the woman chew the guy's ear off. Like, it just it rings me wrong so many ways. The constant reminding Bloodhaven's way worse than Gotham. Like, it's not the same, but it's worse, bro. It's so bad. And I'm not Batman either. I'm totally not Batman. And then Lady Vic, God, what the hell was, I mean, why was she even there? She didn't functionally do anything for the story that I can recall. But at the same time, I love Deadly Soames. And I love the way that he's trying to play everybody. And I love the way that Dick trusts him, but he knows he shouldn't. Because he knows, he's gotten the training, he knows that he shouldn't trust this guy. But he also instinctively, I think, knows that he's not a bad guy. And there's all these neat little interactions. And like I said, I like this as a mystery better than like Court of Owls, and I think they give Court of Owls like a 3.5 or a 4 or something. And this is way more fun to read. And as much as it hurts my eyes to read this comic, I want to know how this ends up. I want to know what Blockbuster ends up doing. I want to know how Soames ends up playing all these sides. I want to see the story end. As much as it will hurt my eyeballs to do that, I want to see it end. And so, God, I think at the end of this, when we spend a good half an hour bitching about it, I want to give it a 3.5.
Which, sometimes comics have, like, something, a saving grace like that. So you don't have to feel bad giving it a 3.5.
I think as much as we complain, we can get into the gritty details about what in the writing doesn't work and how the lettering, the colors, and the inker didn't work together. And maybe this is a good story that's hurt by the time in which it was written. I think that's more that than anything else, because the mystery is great. The interaction between Dick and Soames is awesome to read. And aside from that, it builds in a way that feels natural, especially with Dick Grayson trying so hard to not be Batman, but still at the end of the day, doing things so close to how Batman did them without even realizing he's doing it. Like, that's, I like that. That works so great. So I'm going to give it a 3.5, which is way higher than I was expecting to give it when I came into this. Because, man, I'm so used to just slamming comics from the 90s. But I do think I want to give this, 3.5.
All right.
All right, David, I'm going to make you go next.
All right. Okay. The art was kind of goofy, but I didn't hate it either. But for the, just like you, Andy, I thought that the story really, really carried this comic. I thought the story was the best part. The art was okay. I think you guys disliked it more than I did. I kind of go either way, even though there were some places where I kind of got lost in the action. It wasn't such that it pulled me out of the story. I was like, okay, I can just skip gloss over the art and just read the text. And so I that didn't really bother me. You know, just like you, I thought Soames was an awesome character. And like you, I liked the interaction between the two characters because they were both trying to get... They were using each other to do what they want. I mean, Nightwing was getting information out of Soames so he could be your hero. And Soames was directing Nightwing so that... He was directing him to crime so he wouldn't see the other crime happening. You wouldn't see Blockbuster over here in the corner, right?
Yeah.
So, like I said, the mystery was really good. I knew that Blockbuster was the main villain in Bloodhaven because
the issue later, one half.
Well, there's the half issue too, and I've read later stuff. Like when I read No Man's Land recently, and there's some Nightwing crossover in it, and so there's mention of Blockbuster. So I knew that he's the big bad in Bloodhaven, but I still was like, I wanted to know how they would get to that point. And because we had to go through the motions with Nightwing, it made it much more compelling. So I'm also going to give this a 3.5. I thought it was really good. I'm not really good, obviously. If I thought it was really good, I would give it like a 4.5 or something. But I thought it was definitely. I don't regret reading it. I'm happy that I did. And if somebody was like, "Do you think Nightwing's worth reading?" I'd say, "Yeah, Nightwing's cool. Read it." Yeah. So 3.5.
Especially if you like, pile driving.
Well, I mean, that's why Jen's gonna give it a 5, right?
Yeah. So what are you gonna rate it, Jen?
5. No. I'm actually really glad that I got to hear your thoughts on it first, because I was going into the rating being like, oh man, I don't even know. So kind of, not even that bad. A 3. And at risk of repeating some of what you said, both of you, I felt like this was a good comic weighed down by being a product of its time. I think that I didn't feel like Lady Vic, for instance, was a useless character, because it ended... We saw... I need to get my thoughts together here. We saw what she's capable of, that she is a formidable opponent to Nightwing, and that she is later going to come back and challenge him because she's being held on retainer. So... I think that's more of an introduction to her, and we can sense that there's something going to happen. Especially, you know, later she's like, hey, Bruce Wayne, what up? The art did distract me at points because I felt like the action in some of the fight scenes was integral to understanding what happened later. Like, you know, what happened to Reynard, for instance, in some of that? I was like, did he fall out of the bank with his henchmen, or did he get blown up, or did he end up on the helicopter? Who survived, who didn't? And it took me a little bit to figure out what was going on there, but I needed to know so that I could figure out, like, you know, just how well Nightwing had done there and, you know, who's going to come later. The story I liked. It didn't waste time with too much exposition, and it didn't coddle you at all. It was like, you know, here's our mystery. We're going to go through it. We're not going to recap. You need to read all the issues and pay attention. And I appreciated that. Because it didn't waste time telling me useless information. And I feel like, you know, nothing was really resolved. We found out that Blockbuster's the big bad in Bloodhaven, but he wasn't really defeated. Lady Vic is still around. You know, Soames is still very questionable. We don't know what his motives are exactly. So this was a really good setup for the rest of the comic. And I think, as Andy said, you know, Court of Owls left me thinking like, ooh, a mystery, what's going to happen next? But with Court of Owls, I'd be fine going on Wikipedia and reading what happened and being like, okay, now I know, and I could walk away with that knowledge. This, I want to experience it. So the two stars coming off there, well, one is it's just not a five. It doesn't have that very special thing that makes a comic a five. The next star coming off is it's too much a product of its time. The art is not something I enjoyed. I don't think it's necessarily because it was bad, but 90s comic art, I just tend not to like it. And that's not the artist's fault in any way. That's an issue of opinion. So, I mean, too bad. And some of the dating of it, like the character design, it just felt a little jarring, but it worked overall. So a three.
All right.
Cool.
Nice. I was, you know, when I opened and saw the first like two pages of this, I was like, oh God, we're going to crap on this. Like we crapped on Spawn just because that's my immediate reaction when I see 90s art.
You totally called it, Jen, when you said, or I don't remember if it was you or Andy, but you said this is one where we're going to have to talk it out. And we did, and look what happened. We all realized we did really enjoy this comic.
Yeah.
So hopefully next week will be just as much of an enjoyable surprise. We're going to read Captain America Winter Soldier. That's issues 1 to 9 and 11 to 14 of Captain America, the run written by Ed Brubaker with art by Steve Epting, Mike Perkins, and Michael Lark. This is laughable little sidekick Bucky stepping up and becoming fucking Winter Soldier, bro. Winter Soldier. Until then, if you want to know what we got coming up even after next week, hit up our website, which is www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. There's a couple buttons on the right. Click on the one that says Future Shows. Click on Past Shows, too. We've got like 100-something episodes for you to listen to. It's pretty baller, not going to lie. So go ahead and listen to whatever comic that you read and you like. We might have already read it. We probably actually have after 120 of these. but, you know, if we haven't read your favorite comic and you want us to, shit, if we haven't read your favorite comic, I want to. Because if it's somebody's favorite, that means it's probably not too bad. Go ahead and let us know what your recommendation is. Send us an email.
At atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
But if that's not quite your shindig, doing that whole emailing thing because you got a cell phone and you want to do like the Facebooks or the Tweeters. I don't know why I always pretend to be such an old man when it comes to the social media. Whatever. We've got facebook.com/APSupercast and twitter.com/APSupercast. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
All right. Until next week, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.